Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Context Machine. This is episode 618. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamut. Hey, check us out on our new home, contextmachine.io.
Ish.
You know.
Ish. Yeah, Ichabod is like, dude. Ish, did you hear him? He's growling at you.
I did. You. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, holy crap, you finished saying your part. I was startled and realized, oh, I'm supposed to say something.
Well, it's because I usually goof it up or drag it out or make stuff up. It's not your fault.
That's true. You know what? I accept your apology.
Yeah, you got it. You can also, by the way, use contextmachine.io to reach out to us. You can find us on post.news and Mastodon at contextmachine. Did you get Dave sent me a follow on the Mastodon?
Hamilton. Which Dave?
Hamilton.
Oh,
so he apparently active on Mastodon, at least in some capacity now. Now here's the funny thing.
Yes, he's getting more. I'm totally talking over you. And you know what? Just suck it up. Anyhow, yes, Dave is getting more active on Mastodon.
Yeah.
And Mac Geek Gab is getting active on Mastodon now too.
Yes.
Hey, and as long as I'm just like taking over right now.
Sure.
Just a shout out to John F. Braun. I don't know if you know, but he announced on MacGeekGab just a few days ago that he is retiring from podcasting.
Yes, the end of an era.
The end of an era.
Salute,
so shout
John.
Out to you, John. That's what, like 18 years?
Yeah, 18
of
years.
MacGeekGab.
Yeah, they were way ahead on the podcast name. Of course, you know, as everyone knows, all podcasting was stolen from Sean King.
Right.
But the Geek Gab is one of the very early podcasts.
Yes. Yeah, back when you had to hand roll your own RSS like an animal.
Like an animal. You had to do everything.
Yeah.
Everything. So, yeah. Good times. Good times. Yeah. All right. So listen, you watched, you're caught up on Ted Lasso?
Well, if you mean I just finished watching or most recently watched the Amsterdam episode, then yes.
Okay. So you're not. So I guess that spoils our plan of talking about the last episode ever. Because you're like seven episodes behind.
Yeah. No, it's six episodes. You know,
Yeah, okay. Six. Well, great. I guess we'll just have to talk about like dirigibles and cars.
As one does. I mean, to be fair, if you can't talk about Ted Lasso, you talk about dirigibles and cars.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Well, then let's dive into. I sent you a link to an article, a Bloomberg article, on about Sergey Brin's. The title of the article from Bloomberg is "Sergey Brin has a secret plan to put airships back in the skies again."
Guess it's not so secret now.
Definitely, I don't really think it ever was secret. It was just low profile. And you read that, right?
Bless your heart.
No.
No.
Why?
I don't have a Bloomberg account.
Well, I don't either, but I have an Apple News subscription.
Okay, well then why? Oh, that's right. You have a subscription. I have the app. I don't like the Apple News app, so eh.
Okay, there's one thing I don't like about Apple News, and that is trying to get back to the homepage from anywhere, because you can't. You have to click back and 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 back until you finally get to it. Which is ridiculous. If someone knows where the hidden button to get back to the Apple News main landing page is, share it. Please.
Well, I mean, I feel like you're kind of an outlier in this case, because whoever seriously, whoever wants to go back to the homepage in any app?
Oh, I like to. It's a great way to catch all the headlines that have been secure for me. Duh. What are you talking about? Why else would you do it?
Not picking up what I'm putting down. Everyone always wants to go back to the homepage for whatever the app is. That's where you start.
Oh, yeah, right. Who would want to do that? Apple.
for all eight listeners,
yeah,
they just really loved every moment of that because they all got the joke right away.
Except for the fact I really didn't understand. That part wasn't a joke.
I know. I still love you.
Okay, here's the deal. Sergey Brin has a company. This is his second dirigible company or rigid air machine. What are they calling these things? There's
Zeppelins. Is that a euphemism?
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe. It is kind of... Anyway. So, a long time ago, Google or some combination of Sergey and Larry Page, the two of the three Google co-founders, or the two Google co-founders, right? Eric's not a co-founder, is he? Eric Schmidt?
No, didn't they bring him? Brought Eric in.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I mean, he got a substantial part of the company. Anyway, and he was certainly a huge part of their early success, but whatever. Anyway, that's as problematic as Eric Schmidt can be in other ways. They bought the massive NASA hangars in Mountain View. Have you ever seen those when you've been here in the Bay Area?
I have seen those, and all I could think was the raves there have to be off the hook.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Huge, massive. I mean, like, they're definitely iconic landmarks in the Bay Area because anyone driving up and down 101, which is everyone at some point or another, is going to see them. And they are huge. And apparently, Sergey Brin has an obsession with dirigibles, Zeppelins, hot air balloons, mm-hmm. not blimps, the rigid air machine. What are they calling these things? Hold on. Oh, hey, there's no find in Apple News. What?
I accept your apology. God. I think it's kind of a crappy app. I don't like it, and
I do like the content though. I like the access to the content.
I can appreciate that, but the app totally put me off. Just the whole experience.
Fair enough. I won't actually. I won't take any exceptions to that.
You know, I'm still sitting here, just totally visualizing the whole rave thing and thinking, ain't no party like a NASA rocket scientist party.
Well, there's three of these things over there, and Sergey's only using one of them for his blimps.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the deal is, he has had this obsession with Zeppelins. And he met someone who was working at Ames, which is the NASA sort of secret lab B place. Right, Ames Research Center.
Work with me. Just your description was awesome.
Yeah, work with me. And he met someone there who was also obsessed with Zeppelins. Who was apparently a genius. And so they ended up doing a company, and then that company folded after it ran out of money, and Sergey didn't throw it a lifeline. But then he started another company, and that company, what is that company called? That company is called LTA Research and Exploration LLC. They want to make rigid airships that not only take passengers, but also will take freight more cheaply, not as fast, but more cheaply, and way less of a carbon footprint than planes, trains, or trucks, which isn't hard.
So he's actually picturing this as a transocean transport system.
And he also thinks that dirigibles can be used to more effectively and safely and cheaply drop supplies into disaster zones. You don't need a runway. And what they're thinking is that they can, let me see if I can find the stuff. You know, can't find it or anything like that. They are saying that they can carry, is it 200 tons with one of these things? So what the company has been doing is been inventing new ways to make these ships. And so not only like new materials, new construction methods, and also new like new ways of making safer and stronger and better and cheaper innards, like the actual rigid structure that's inside. So the one they built so far, I think has 12. I want to say it's 12. Don't hold me to that. Helium cells in it. And it's got all this carbon fiber stuff that's being used to hold thing together. It does have a gondola, but because is it like if you look at a Goodyear blimp, and I learned this from the article, if you look at a Goodyear blimp, the engines and propellers are attached to the gondola. They have to be, or the gondola even.
Right. Right. Because on a blimp, the big balloon part is literally just a big balloon.
It's just a big balloon. And so with a Zeppelin or with a rigid air machine, I really wish I could find what they're calling these. You can attach the engines and the propellers to the blimp part. But it's not a blimp.
Right, because it's not just a balloon.
Right, which means that things get quieter for anyone in the gondola.
Mm-hmm.
Quieter, okay. You know, fewer vibrations and everything like that. So they have been building one of these machines and figuring out how to do all this stuff. And see, airships could one day carry 200 tons of cargo. 200 tons of cargo. 200 tons of cargo. That's, what is that, 400,000 pounds? And play, is that right? 200?
I'm not even bothering pulling out a calculator.
Yeah, 400,000 pounds of cargo. Not the one they're building now, but the next one that they would build. And they wouldn't build a ton of these things and have a fleet of them. They've bought some of Goodyear's facilities in Akron, Ohio. Akron. Boy, I'm doing really well.
You're doing awesome.
And they bought a bunch of Goodyear stuff, facilities in Ohio. They've been hiring in Ohio, so that they got the team out here in Silicon Valley, and then they've got the team in Ohio that are working on this stuff. And they want to make these things, and they want to make them like big. Oh, the one that. The successor to this like sort of prototype that they're building will be 185 meters long.
That's big.
That's huge. It will fly faster. I'm quoting from the article, and will fly faster and farther and carry more stuff. According to Weston, that's the Zeppelin fiend that came out of Ames. LTA's airships could one day carry as much as 200 tons of cargo, almost 10 times the amount of something like a Boeing 737. So, obviously not as fast, but still pretty fast. And, there's a lot of, and faster than a train, faster than a truck.
What kind of altitude can you get on one of these?
Ooh, they didn't.
I'm thinking about the logistics of having this relatively slow moving air vehicle, relatively because I have to compare it to airplanes. Where do they fit in flight pattern areas?
I don't think any. I would be shocked if the company wasn't thinking about that, but I can't imagine that any regulators or anyone has solved for that because it's not a problem or issue yet.
Yeah. Okay. So here's another thing that I'm thinking about, which shows you how little I know about the physics of airships. Can they go high enough to go over the Continental Divide? Because if not, at that point, you have airship cargo travel that's limited to Eastern or Western U.S., and it doesn't cross over.
Yeah, they didn't talk about that. Well, I mean, there would be some place they could go.
Okay, like if it goes way south.
Way south, yeah. They could do that. But I don't know if they can get, I mean, the gondola is pressurized, the one that they're doing at least. I mean, for whatever mm-hmm. that's worth. I don't know. I they did not talk about altitude in this article. And so I don't know the answer for that. I do know that I'm stalling. Yeah, I don't even know what I know.
Okay.
Oh, so, I know what I was going to say. So the prototype that they've built uses diesel engines and has solar panels on the top of the gondola, or at least it's going to. It's designed to. Mm-hmm. But the Mr. Weston wants to replace the he wants to run these things off of fuel cells. So the green energy, like he wants the whole thing to be run off of green energy.
Okay. That's cool.
That is cool. Now, another cool thing is one of the things that they invented was apparently like in Akron, Ohio, at the Goodyear blimp. Goodyear was making like hundreds of blimps back in the day, apparently, according to the article. But people would basically climb up on scaffolding, and in some cases they would climb up a 100-foot ladder to work on the tops of these blimps that they were making. Well, as you can imagine, that's, sometimes people get hurt. So what they came up with was a way essentially of rotating the entire structure a few millimeters at a time so that basically almost everything can be done at ground level while it's being manufactured.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a big rotisserie for yes. the dirigible.
Yeah, and it's massive. So like the coordination has to be perfect. Because otherwise you're going to twist that thing and wreck it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's fascinating. They have apparently invented many of the things, which is funny when you're thinking about inventing things to make this 100-year-old, effectively obsolete technology. And they're making it unobsolete, or trying to. Pretty cool, huh?
So. It is cool. And I decided that that while you're talking, I might as well do a nice little Google search, like how high can a dirigible fly?
Okay.
And the results that I've been finding are interesting. So old school dirigibles, that was 1,000 feet.
Oh, yeah. That's no good.
Some of the experimental technology that's been looked at through the aerospace program in the military, you're talking about stuff that's hitting 20,000 feet or even higher.
And what do we need to clear the Rockies?
Well, I mean, realistically, to clear the Rockies in the United States, the lowest altitude that you can go would be 15,000 feet, and then you would be almost scraping Mount Elbert, because Mount Elbert is it's a 14,000 foot peak, but it's almost 15,000 feet.
Got it.
So yes, it'd have to be. So I'd say you need to be able to go higher than 15,000 feet. But I also, I'll make sure there's a link to this article that I'm about to mention from Smithsonian in 2014, okay. where they're talking about the potential future for airships, and like the headline in this one, an airship the size of a football field could revolutionize travel. And then in the subheading, it talks about being able to carry up to 50 tons. They can stay aloft for weeks. They can land basically anywhere. So, yeah, It's my guess is that there are other companies that are looking at doing this sort of thing as well.
Yeah, if LTA is successful with this, and I mean, there will definitely be other people to glom on. Other companies to glom on. I mean, if LTA can show that they can make money. Yeah, you know, I mean, like American Airlines and Delta would be idiots not to get into the dirigible business.
If
it was profitable
for human air travel,
not for this cargo feels too.
To me, well, sure. And, I mean, for cargo, and this makes a lot more sense.
And FedEx I hear what you're saying on that, but people take cruise ships, and cruise ships are a nightmare.
Okay, so you're stealing part of what's in my head. I was thinking the cruise ship thing.
Yeah.
So in my mind, an airship for human transport is like going on a cruise. The trip is the purpose.
Yeah.
And this isn't something that, like, if I'm traveling for business, that I would book my flight on a dirigible. For cargo, it makes more sense. However, I'm not thinking UPS, FedEx, companies like that. I'm thinking the big cargo carriers that are moving just all the other merchandise around, and, you know, all the things that you're doing with trucks right now and with trains.
It seems like you could have less piracy on the seas too. Like if you could move freight faster and cheaper and safer than a ship, that would be a winner than a water ship, a watercraft. All right. So I sent you a link.
Yeah.
That's to their home page. What do you call those? Web page. GeoCities. What?
Yeah. Oh, look, it's their MySpace.
If you go there and scroll down, there is an Our Airship animation that is interactive. Did you find it?
Oh, okay. Yep. Launch the experience. Oh, that's so clever.
But you can also like spin and lift and lower the thing right there. And it shows you all of the propellers that are attached to it. It shows you the gondola even. And then, but if you launch the experience, there are hotspots that you can click and it'll zoom in and it'll give you more information about things like the propulsion motors. That's the first one that I tried. It'll give you, let's see here, what is this? The LiDAR.
Yeah, it's got just some kind of LiDAR helium thing. Bags.
Ugly bags of mostly helium. It's got LiDAR sensors. I don't really know where do you see that? Where is outer covering, mainframes, tail joint? Ah, there we go. Helium bags. Oh, look at that. Oh, that's not what I thought it looked like. There, it's 12 like rings. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're not like stacked. They're in a line. Cool.
Yeah. Which.
What I'm not sure about, like, where's the 200 tons of cargo going?
It goes. Okay, so those airbags that are like big rings, think of them like donuts.
Yeah.
There's a big empty space in the middle of the donuts, right down the middle. That's where you're putting your cargo.
No.
The cargo is surrounded by.
Yes. No. Are you?
Yes.
Are you assuming?
No.
Do you see some information?
Telling me how these work.
There's no way that is going to be the case. It's got to hang down from underneath it, like behind the gondola. Are you sure about that?
Thing, yeah, this is how dirigibles have always worked. You can be inside the big part. I just blew your mind. It's like.
Are you sure about this?
Explain to you that
anybody know
that beer, you don't add the carbonation into it; it makes it itself. Do you remember that day?
Yes, I do remember that day. I'd already forgotten that, but yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad I brought it back up then.
Yeah. If anybody knows about these things, tell us. Straighten one of us out. Because I don't believe it. I don't believe that the cargo goes in the middle. I don't believe that even for a second. That's crazy. Not only that, that would be a pain in the butt to get in and out of a disaster area. I am positive it's going to hang beneath the thing.
Okay.
If anyone knows, please, I'm telling you, straighten one of us out. Please.
Part of the thing is that you can have stuff inside.
Huh.
I mean, yes, having the whole thing underneath, that's great for people because now you have this place where people can have windows and look out.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see. Explore features. What do we? No, that's just the thing. Okay. All right. Well, super interesting. I hope that they're successful with this. The impact, like being able to move cargo without, like, you know, chalking the filling the atmosphere up with carbon, that would be a good thing. That'd be kind of cool. Plus, yeah. You know, I always love a good throwback. Speaking of, let's move on to topic two.
Oh my God, that's right. We have two topics today.
Yeah. There is a new car company called Olympian Motors. Olympian Motors. And they're making this electric vehicle that is very much a modern throwback to the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, here, check this out. I'm confident that this is the car that they're basing that on.
Oh, that's a pretty car.
Yeah, it's the Zephyr, the Lincoln Zephyr. I am confident that, and there is a two-seater version. Let me find the two-seater version. There is a two-seater version that is even, like this one right here. Look at this thing. Look at, we'll include these links in the show notes.
Right, because Brian saying, look at this, is great on an audio podcast.
Right. Look at the blue one there. That's the two-seater version. And I'm pretty that's the one I really think they're basing their new car off of.
Okay. I just love the look of these cars. And when I say I just love that retro look, of course at the time it was very modern, but
it was extremely, yeah. extremely modern. And a lot of Zephyrs have been hot rodded out since, unfortunately. But anyway, regardless, this new car company, and they are new. As a matter of fact, they're so new, their goal is to sell 30 units this year and 300 next year. So, new car company. In fact, you can invest in them. I have not invested in them. I'm not recommending that anyone invest in them. And if you are interested, you should absolutely do your own due diligence. But they're essentially crowdsourcing some of their capital needs, and you can reserve a car, and these things are priced at $80,000. Interestingly, I asked Jeff ahead of time how much. I already knew the answer, but I had had my own preconception. I said, Jeff, how much do you think this car is? And you said,
I said $120,000.
It's about what I was expecting too, and it turns out that they're launching it at $80,000 at least to start,
which actually I think is very surprising.
So yeah, same. Very, very surprising. And if you remember, Tesla started off with its high-end car, right? The X. No, not the X. What's the other? What is it? It's the X? You got the S? You got the, I don't know. You get the
you they started. The S, you have the 3 and the X.
Right.
Because her.
Right. Because Elon is 12. Is it a four door? Or is it a two door?
This car?
It's got to be
a four.
It's got to be a two-door.
It's a four-door.
One of the images looks like it could be a four-door.
Every image I'm looking at in fancy car is a four-door.
With suicide doors? Like the back doors, suicide doors? Because the handle...
Well, based on where the handle is, sure, I guess you're probably right.
But I don't know for sure.
But
we're talking, by the way, about the Model 01. There's a truck that I just saw for the very first time called the Model 84, and we're not going to talk about that. You can look at it if you want. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the Model 01. Did I lose you?
No, I'm just sitting here looking at pictures of the car.
Right. So I can't find any pictures of this thing with the doors open, interestingly enough. Although
just the front doors.
They do have pictures of the interior. And they're doing a... Remember that thing where I said I'm not going to buy a car that doesn't support CarPlay?
You found the car that breaks that rule for you?
I don't know, because they don't support CarPlay. I would love one of these things because I think they're cool. Do I need one? No. Am I likely to get one? Probably not. But it is definitely it's a dreamy looking car. Like, Silicon Valley is going to be papered with these things if they can make them.
Yeah.
These things are going to be just the hot ticket in Silicon Valley. There's no displays. They're actually
it's like old school gauges.
Yeah, they're old school. It's a very throwback dashboard, and with you know, like wooden panels, and I assume they're wood. I don't know if it's fake wood. And dials and gauges. And that's it. No 2D displays, no LCD displays, nothing like that. But they have a HUD for the front windshield. So information will be projected onto the windshield for you to see it there, which is safer than having an LCD display on your dashboard. And to my knowledge, they are not doing any kind of self-driving thing. Certainly hasn't been announced yet. They talk about, did you remember that thing? You spotted it right away. And the funny thing is, it's one of the first things I saw too. So they have a section on their site called Powered by Olympian Operating System, OOS. And I prep without pills. Have you seen that commercial?
Do that again.
I prep without pills.
I don't even know what that is.
It is some kind of, I think it's an ED pill, but the commercials drive me nuts. And one of the actors, like the voice does not go with the actor saying it. Like, I'm confident that it's an overdub. Mm-hmm. And it sounds just like that. And it drives me bananas every time that commercial comes on. And anyway, that's the mind of Brian. So powered by Olympian Operating System. They brag about the radically, yes.
Nope. It's fine.
They brag.
I was going to make a stupid joke, but it's gone.
Excellent. They brag about the radically simplified driver experience. Their words, they have military grade data privacy and security, but I don't know what they're protecting because they're not doing displays and stuff.
I have a hypothesis on this.
Oh, do tell.
Okay. So you have your old school analog gauges.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So no displays. But this is an electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely computers inside, like probably all over this machine.
Yeah. And there's a HUD.
And right. And so there's all kinds of data that's being collected all the time. Like, how's it going to show you information in the HUD? It's collecting data as you're driving.
Right.
And so even though you're not getting a traditional, I say traditional, but what we expect now, an LCD panel on the dash somewhere, you're getting that HUD thing instead. So there's still a lot of data that's being collected. And my guess is that for at least part of what this car is doing. It either has, like some cars, its own wireless connection to send and receive data.
Yeah.
And it probably does have a way to pair with your smartphone as well.
I know you can play music from your phone, from your device, from your mobile device. I can't remember where I saw that, but as I was poring over the site yesterday, that's what I saw. They also tout a quote voice first unquote command and control. So no dial.
I'd love to know more about that.
Yeah, for sure. Like only dials and gauges on this very simplified dashboard and a quote unquote voice first command and control.
My guess is that what that means is that instead of having to tap on a stupid display to try and get to all of the physical controls that you should have, that you can do things like say, hey, Olympian, turn on the headlights. Hey, Olympian, turn on the heat.
Well, it probably... I mean, if they're not going to have any kind of display, and they're also not really giving me room, I mean, yeah, I could stick
a holder. Look at the dash. The controls that you have on the dash are very limited.
Right.
Like, there's not enough controls that I'm seeing on this car to do all the things that you need to do. How do you turn on windshield wipers?
Yeah, air conditioning.
Air conditioning,
hazard lights,
mm-hmm.
Blinkers. Where the blinker? I don't even see where the. I don't see.
Yeah, there's no stock on the steering columns turn signals.
Oh, and we noticed ahead before we started recording the show, we noticed that there was one image of the dash that shows essentially a knob, which is probably a starter knob, three gauges, and then another gauge. And then if you go below that, there's a different dash that has multiple buttons and gauges on it.
Yeah, it looks like it has two gauges and buttons, several buttons.
Those little ones are gauges too. There's the two black buttons.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. There's a row of circles.
Yeah.
At the bottom.
Not the bottom. Above the two black buttons. I think those are gauges.
Oh, above the two black buttons. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So those would be gauges. Then we have the two buttons, and then the row of what I'm assuming are indicator lights for different things about the car underneath that.
Yeah, that is weird. What we
colloquially call idiot lights.
Those are weird. So I'm guessing there will be different options, and I'm guessing that $80,000 is the start. Obviously, that's a lot of money to the vast majority of people. This car is super cool. I hope that you'll take the time to go and look at this car at least and marvel at it. Let us know what you think too.
It's a very pretty car, and for me, I can't imagine ever owning one. This looks to me like something that would be horribly impractical in Colorado.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it may be a European and Silicon Valley kind of car.
I'm with you on that. Yep. One of the photos, they have this parked at Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah. Well, that's not Silicon Valley, but you know, what else?
Right. But that car looks perfect right there at Santa Monica Pier at sunset.
It does. Let's see. One other thing too, they have, this car is not fast. So a lot of electric vehicles are quite fast. This one is not.
Define what you mean by fast.
Compared to other electric vehicles.
So like it goes 50 miles an hour and that's it?
No. All right. So goes 0 to 60 in 5.7 seconds. That's not fast. It's been decades since that was fast.
Okay.
It has a top speed of 160, which is far faster than anyone needs to be going.
So the car can go a fast speed, but has slower acceleration than comparable electric cars.
Right. And it has a range of 305 miles, which is going to be more than enough for the way most people drive. Not great for a cross-country drive, maybe, but I don't know that I would want to. I don't know. the jury would be out whether or not this would be my cross country car of choice, even if I had one.
I don't think this would be a cross country.
So they also, by the way, brag without, it's like a humble brag, because they don't actually say we're better than Tesla, but they have a chart showing their miles per kilowatt hour, where they are second from the top. I think Mercedes is number one. I can't find it right now. It's on this page somewhere. But the Mercedes is on the top with like 5 miles per kilowatt hour, according to this company. And I don't know where they're getting the data, and I can't verify it. I could verify it, but I didn't.
Right, because that's how we roll.
That's how we roll. But they were showing Tesla at 4 miles per kilowatt hour, and they were showing their car at 4.1 miles per kilowatt hour. And part of that's probably going to be the performance. That slower acceleration is probably part of how they're getting more miles per kilowatt hour out of their car. Plus, it's pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. Interesting car, interesting looking. It's one of those throwbacks. I have always loved the Zephyr, the Lincoln Zephyr. It was such a beautiful car, and back in the day, and having this such a modern. You remember how like the when Volkswagen redid the Bug, and it was like. Yeah, it's the Bug, but it's totally modern and new.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what that feels like. There's nothing about this car that doesn't scream brand new sexy stuff, but it is such a throwback to the 30s.
It totally is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well. So let us know what you think. You can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us... Context Machine on the social medias. We're on the Facebooks. We have a group, Facebook group, Context Machine. We'll have links to that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Jeff, where are you? I think you're on social media somewhere.
I'm on social media somewhere. Jay Gamut.
Right.
Posted on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. Let me write that down.
I love Jeff's photos. Jeff is a very good photographer. You. And your perspective and viewpoint is always interesting. And then I am the Geek Tales everywhere.
You are?
Yeah.
So, Brian, I'm going to be at Max Stock in July.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Wish you were going to be there.
Thank you. That's very kind. I hope you have fun.
Oh, I will. And to loop it back to the beginning, I know that John Braun will be there. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him a hug for you.
Please.
I'll hold it just a little too long.
Excellent. He will love that.
Yeah. So it's just slightly awkward.
And if you can kind of like stroke Dave's back at the same time, that'd be great.
Oh, not a problem. And excellent. I'm sure Dave will be totally fine with that.
Yeah. Dave would be. Yeah, for sure. 100%.
Oh yeah.
All right. So listen, Jeff, let me do this thing here. Look. See, that's how we do that. And that is this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on contextmachine.io. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded mm-hmm. just for us. Mm-hmm. And Jeff, that's all for this week, brother.
Sweet.
I missed the play button four times. four times, man.
Top man.